Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to the Living Free Show on 3CR Community Radio, 855 kHz on your AM dial. I'm Anne, and I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present, and to acknowledge that the material and spiritual connection of Aboriginal people to this land was stolen from them. Each week on the Living Free Show, we showcase one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drug, alcohol, gambling, food, and other addictions. Our guests share their recovery stories and highlight that shared experience saves lives. Now, before we start, I'd like to remind you that the Living Free Show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm, and family violence. Please practice self-care and care of others when listening. Today, I'm joined in the studio by Chris. Chris is a member of Al-Anon. And also, and just for those who are unsure, Al-Anon is an organization that exists for the mutual aid of people who've been affected by other people's alcoholism. Chris also works in coaching people towards emotional well-being and living their authentic life, and is particularly interested in embodied processing, which is a kind of somatic therapy that takes into consideration, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, that trauma is stored in the body and that part of our total well-being, emotional, mental, physical, spiritual well-being is paying attention to that embodiment of trauma. Is that correct?
Yeah, well said. I like your take on it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. But what we'll start with, Chris, is just your personal story, starting from the very beginning and then talking about getting to the point where you joined Al-Anon. So where did it all start for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. I'm excited to be here and where my life started. So yeah, I grew up in a sort of a middle-class family, and I'm from Melbourne, Australia, and grew up in Sandringham. And the last few, well, I moved down to Frankston, about when I was about 8 years old, and I've sort of been in this area ever since. I really gravitated to music as a youngster. My parents had a good collection of vinyl records, and I really got hooked into some of the old stuff like the Beatles and the Doors and Elvis, and it just really kind of, we were talking about being in the present earlier, you know, just, and it really helped me come into the present moment, and yeah, I just get a warm fuzzy feeling kind of listening to some of those songs, and so I remember starting to sing when I was about 10, and, you know, just in my own privacy, I just enjoyed it, but I was, you know, not really singing in public per se. Until later down the track, I also started learning guitar in high school, and I really sort of was fascinated with that, and it sort of lit up some sort of spark in me, and yeah, I remember I really enjoyed sitting in my bedroom playing guitar, and it wasn't until I'd get on stage that I noticed I'd start to have certain reactions and nervousness, and you could call it stage fright. And yeah, so eventually I did start to do gigs, and I noticed all this anxiety would come up, and I probably didn't even know to use that word at that stage, but it felt quite uncomfortable. And And as we all know, a lot of the gigs happen where there's plenty of drinks being served and that kind of thing. And a lot of my friends were into drinking, and I kind of took to it, before too long as well, sort of in my late teens and early 20s. And that was sort of the thing to do. That was what was happening around me, both, in my family and with my friends. And I sort of caught on, and I realized it was a bit of a social lubricant. I realized it was also a way of helping me get on stage and not be freaking out. And I remember at one, I got into a band after a while. I did a few sort of solo duo acoustic gigs, and I got into a band, and I remember the first gig we did, and it was at the drummer's house, and he had a party, and he had all these people over, and I was like, wow, this is the first gig as a band. And I'd been sort of anticipating and looking forward to this for probably years and years. And I remember like saying to my mate, the drummer, like, are we going to go down to the Bottle-O and just, get some supplies? And I remember just grabbing, like, I remember basically I drank like half a bottle of whiskey before I went on stage. And I just remember thinking, and people were sort of coming up and going, oh, you sang well and you played well. And I was like, oh, well, that's good, that's sort of what I wanted. But there was still a part of me that felt a bit uncomfortable with like, why did I have to drink to do that? And this kind of thing went on through my 20s into my early 30s, I remember I was also teaching music as well, and I had some interesting conversations. I got sort of to know some of my students, and some of them had quite a lot of wisdom, and they were able to point out things that I hadn't seen. Like, and besides the alcoholism and the dependency of it, playing music and socializing, I'd also battled with OCD and anxiety, and I did start to use that word anxiety because I went to see a therapist, a couple of different psychologists, and they sort of said, oh, you're showing strong symptoms of OCD and anxiety. And I was like, okay, well, starting to make some sense. And one of my students, one of my guitar students, she sort of, I started to have some interesting conversations with her, like after guitar lessons, and she just sort of, I sort of said, oh, look, I'm finding it hard to be present. I'm finding it hard to enjoy teaching anymore. I'm finding it hard to enjoy doing gigs anymore. And she started to ask me about like, tell me more about your past. Like, is there anything in your past that has been difficult? And I was like, initially I sort of thought, oh, it's been a pretty normal life, so I thought. But as I spent more time with her, and then later I went and saw another therapist, I realized that there were certain things in my past that weren't really sitting very well. And one of them was some bullying experiences that I'd had in sort of late primary school. And there was sort of a lot of shame and anger around that, I didn't even know I was sort of carrying that. And then, a few years down the track, basically, there was some other trauma that I'd experienced with my grandfather, one of my grandfathers, and that was a big one to sort of be able to process, and that was sort of what led me into the embodied processing work, and because I did start to learn more about trauma and how it affects our psyche, and also our capacity to be in the present and be in our body and feel safe in our body. And things started to make more sense. And this was about 5 years ago when I started to do this kind of work. So
Oh, okay. Interesting. And was there any alcoholism in the background? Was that part of your grandfather's story?
So it was more the alcoholism was, my father would drink wine every night, and I found it not easy to be able to connect with him. I sort of, in some ways, that I loved my father and I still do, but I just felt sort of a distance with him. I didn't really know this was going on. I just sort of thought this is how it is. I don't know what it's like for other people, but I really found it hard to get to know him or for him to get to know me. And yeah, there was drinking with him. And then later my brothers and obviously myself kind of caught on and sort of head down the same direction. And my grandfather, the trauma that with him was in the realm of sexual abuse. So I was pretty young, first few years of my life, and I basically blocked it out. And it wasn't until I started to do this somatic work sort of 5 years ago that it all came up, basically. And And again, I have a lot of love for my family, but they're in the position of looking at my grandfather as a good man and he hasn't done anything wrong. And so it's created a lot of divide in my family. And fortunately, well, I don't know if that's the right word, but there is another person in my extended family that's gone through the same thing, which isn't fortunate, but it's the fortunate part is that we can support each other.
With the same person, with the same grandparent.
From the same person. And so, and I haven't actually, this is probably a bit of a big moment because I haven't really expressed this publicly. I've expressed it, but I feel like it's probably time because, I, not just for myself, but because it does impact lots of men and women, and there's a shame, there's a secrecy around it. And I believe also it leads down a dark path if we can't, communicate about it, if we can't heal from it. So.
Well, Chris, thank you very much for being courageous enough to do that. And just to say, just to say, even though we're sort of live here, look after yourself while we're doing this. And and to people out there too, well, I said before that, this is the kind of show where we get conversation about very difficult topics. And it sounds today actually that we're going to be doing a lot of talking about trauma, and veering a little bit. So it's the show's Living Free. So let's say that today's topic's really about living free from the sort of baggage we carry around from the wide range of experiences that impact us as children, and what we do carry in our bodies. So, thank you very much for coming on today to talk about this, because it's something we haven't really covered directly on the show. And if just bear with me for a minute, I do need to say, because going out to lots of different people, so if anything in this show does trigger off distress about any sexual assault or violence that you've experienced, remember that the number to call is 1-800 RESPECT. Or 1-800-737-732, or you can go to 1800respect.org.au. Okay, so Chris, let's go. You've talked about, a lot there about having anxiety, symptoms of OCD, experiencing bullying, sexual abuse. The shame and anger that comes with all that, and really the nub of it is that your authentic self is expressed through music and singing. I don't want to be telling your story for you, so just tell me if this is right. And that the pleasure of that and the joy of that seems to have got dulled down by the impact of the anxiety on it. So is that the way to put it? Is that right?
Yeah, I think what happened was I trust is sort of, I've had some deep trust issues, and basically that would, I think that was what was coming up when I would get on stage, where I'd be second guessing myself, even though music was what I love. It was like, it was scary expressing myself because it would bring up a lot of emotions and I didn't know what to do with them. But the last 5 years, as I've understood myself better, and the sexual abuse in particular, just kind of understanding, oh, that's why I can feel uncomfortable in my body sometimes, you know, that's why I can feel uncomfortable being witnessed and expressing myself, because as you said before, that being that authentic person means being all of who you are. And so the music in a way has been healing, and I've been able to let go of the alcohol in my own life, because I think that was kind of Dutch courage for a while, because I didn't know how to feel all these feelings and I didn't understand them, you know, like going back a few years.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Over five decades, we've been home to hundreds of shows, thousands of broadcasters and guests, and hundreds of thousands of listeners.
This February, we're aiming for 1,000 subscribers.
It's just $40 concession, $80 full.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Is drinking costing you more than money? Alcoholics Anonymous provides a free and anonymous recovery service to anyone who wants to call it quits. Join millions of other alcoholics worldwide and take your first brave steps towards a new beginning. There are thousands of AA meetings happening every week across Australia. If you'd like to find your closest meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, or have any questions regarding this tried and tested treatment for alcoholism, call 1-300-AA-AA-AA. That's 1-300-22-22-22, or visit aa.org.au.
This community service announcement is sponsored by Alcoholics Anonymous.
This is a Living Free show on 3CR 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. If you would like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform or just Google 3CR Living Free and check out our website. You can also contact us via phone or email. Today, my guest is Chris, and we're chatting about living with, can I call it complex PTSD? Or not.
Yeah.
You're happy with that?
Yeah.
So we're talking about living with complex PTSD, which is something that adult children of alcoholics are often diagnosed with, actually. And it's all around lack of trust, fear of self-expression, anxiety, possibly depression, and certainly going around feeling uncomfortable in your body. So getting a lot of the symptoms of anxiety and fear in your body. It's almost like your brain and body system's got out of whack, and it's telling you that you're in danger when you're not. Right? Okay, so let's you've told the story of where you landed as an adult with this, with your music and your adult life, and you talked about being about 30, and you met someone and became aware of being able to label a little bit what you're dealing with. How did you then start to take on the job of healing or pursue?
I mean, healing does happen relationally, I think, a big part of healing. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the big piece I needed to tend to was, yeah, the grandfather, and because it hadn't been dealt with. And where did I stand with that, and where did the rest of my family stand with that? And as I mentioned before, I love my family, but we're on different sides of that. So I still feel like there's a lot of denial in my family, and that's as I started to learn more about sexual abuse, I realized that was pretty common because it's confronting. It's confronting for both the person who goes through it, but also the people in their family, because it's painful. But I mean, the good news is that there is a way through the pain. I'm not saying it goes away completely, but there's a way to actually start to feel that, and just start to have new experiences. So for me, the somatic therapy, the embodied processing, started to help me. I suppose understand what I actually needed and be able to listen to what I needed. And a lot of that comes from being able to listen to our gut feelings and being able to listen to what's happening in my chest. For example, grief, we can hold a lot of grief in our chest, and it's not until we slow down and we have someone guide us.
So you signed up for the somatic therapy?
That's right. I did the training. I did the training.
Oh, you did the training, right.
And the certification. So I'm certified. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Tell me how that works in a session with someone then. Can you talk me through that?
Yeah, well, the first thing would be to help them find some presence and safety in themselves. And usually, even if we've got, certain pain points or uncertainties, there's usually something we feel sort of okay about ourselves. And that's a good place to start, because it helps us sort of ground and just have a sense of safety and what we would call an anchor or a resource. And then from there, we start to sort of explore more of so where are you feeling drawn to at the moment in your body? Maybe there's something going on in my belly. I feel a little bit of tightness, and there might be some story too. I had an upsetting conversation with my partner or with my sister or brother, and we might go, okay, well, maybe can you allow some space for that? Can we explore that? And it's quite it's a process where really we're including the sensations in the body and we're listening to them, because they can actually have a lot of intelligence in terms of the subconscious things that are going on. So it's sort of like a deep listening, I would say.
To the body.
A deep listening through the body. But there's also space for someone to bring some of their story so that, again, they can feel seen, they can feel safe, and that actually can help them, be with their feelings, because they can be more understood in their feelings. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it really is just being witnessed and held, in a caring way. And it's amazing how our own intuition and capacity to heal starts to kick in when we've got someone who can hold that space and create more safety in someone's world, if you like.
And how does the therapist hold that space? What's the skill in that?
Yeah, so it's first of all, it's a few things, but for example, it's going at a pace that's comfortable for the client, and it's always giving them a choice, where we're going. And that's why we start with that resourcing part, so that if we need to go back there and just ground again, if it's getting too much. And it's also using things we only go into things, as much as they're ready to. We always give them a choice. And we bring a lot of curiosity, and we don't focus so much on we have to fix this or heal this. It's more about just can we be curious? And it's amazing that we always end up learning more about where we're actually at. And a lot of it is just about learning more about ourselves and that's actually what I needed. I just needed to be with that feeling, and now it's starting to shift, and it's starting to show me that it brought up something that from when I was 7 years old, and I I can see that now, and sometimes there'll be an emotional release. Sometimes someone will be able to, feel some sadness that they never got to feel when they were 6 or 12, or and it's just again allowing space for that, and going at the pace that the client feels safe going at. So it's checking in with them, quite a lot. So yeah, that's an example of a few things.
I'd like to relate that to Al-Anon now. Jumping around a bit here,
That's okay.
sort of we're discussing broad themes, but that reminds me a lot about Al-Anon because that's very much about going at your own pace, and nobody gets pressured to, start doing the steps in a different way or quicker. Or and embedded in the Al-Anon program too is that you can't heal yourself; that a higher power needs to be involved, and that can be another human being or another a group or a process. There's two things that Al-Anon's brought that I'm thinking about Al-Anon here. There is that the sort of slow pace of Al-Anon and the only go at your own pace and the gentleness of it. There's three things actually. There's also that there's a sense that thing about hope in Al-Anon. Like you might come into an Al-Anon meeting and you're completely at rock bottom and you're completely desperate by the state that your life's in, but it says you can have hope. There's no situation too difficult to be bettered. And that reminds me of what you just said about no matter how bad our childhoods were or how much trauma people are carrying, there's always happy memory there. There's always something that, well, I sorry, I shouldn't presume, but for many of us, there's some, probably most of us, there's some little moment of love or comfort or joy that we can find there, and it's really good just to know that about ourselves and to know that it's all not all doom and gloom. But the third thing was, and maybe this is what you can start talking about, Al-Anon seems to ha whereas the somatic therapy will help you uncover things in yourself and make sense of your feelings, I think does Al-Anon help you with how to deal with that family stuff that comes around? Because once you've got that remembering about the sexual abuse or whatever, and you've got to confront someone about that. Tell me about that side of your story, if you would, and to what extent Al-Anon's part of that.
Yeah, well, what I love about Al-Anon is it is like a family in itself, because it's, and that's what I've realized over the last, I've been in the program for about 12 months, and I've realized that it's a safe space. It's a safe space where everyone has a voice, and everyone listens. So it's what happens is it's perhaps if there's been some dysfunction earlier in life, and that's obviously usually plays out in family, or it has an impact on family, or what Al-Anon is it's sort of like this refreshing change from that sort of dysfunction, because it's basically something that allows everyone to be seen and heard, and to find their way, and not be sort of given advice and given judgments or projections. It's something where we can grow our sense of self-responsibility, and also I like what you said about this connection to a God of our own understanding. It could be, we could call it higher power, we could call it the universe, we could call it spirit, we could call it intuition, but something that is showing us the way and helping us start to have those healing experiences that we've been longing for. And maybe it was difficult to have that earlier in life because there were certain things playing out in our family or even our social groups. And out that they often that's because of the presence of alcohol. Often it's because of the presence of trauma. And it's, a lot of the time people don't have the tools or the know-how to meet those challenges. So hence they get stuck in these addictive behaviors, or alcoholism being one of them. So it's another way. It's a way to sort of free ourselves from, the shackles of like thinking, oh, this, we've just got to put up with not being able to deal with things. Like we can start to really deal with things and learn to, to move through that together in a group situation.
Oh, there's so much in there what you've said, and just the that structure of Al-Anon. We talk about the 12 steps, but there's those 12 traditions that tell us about how a group runs and how the unity of the group's more important than anybody's ego. That, as you say, everyone gets heard and everyone gets listened to. I mean, imagine there's no family on the planet, I reckon, that manages to pull that off, because families just are not set up for that. They're set up for keeping children safe, earning money, and it's normal for people to for people believe that their job as a parent or a sibling or an uncle is to give advice and to tell people what they should do, and that's accepted as normal, and often maybe that works, but Al-Anon really gives us something totally different from that.
It really does. Like another thing I thought of is like sometimes in family growing up, as you said, like we don't know how to deal with things, and people end up trying to control things because they're having a reaction and they don't know what to do with that reaction. Whereas in Al-Anon, like it's sort of like the invitation is it's okay if you feel a little bit uncomfortable. And to be honest, when I go to Al-Anon meetings, there are things that will come up, but I'm learning to be in my body and be with that discomfort. And it could be something that I've shared and I feel a bit vulnerable, or it could be something someone else has shared and I feel like, oh, I don't know what to make of that, or how do I relate to that? And but what happens is I generally find as the meeting progresses, we go on this journey together and we get the space that we need to sort of just be with our experience and not have to react to it, not have to run away from it. So
Not have
that
to blame anyone for
not have to blame
it.
anyone, like because the and part of why that happens is because everyone's really just sharing about their own experiences. So that's what creates that safety. So, no one's, as you said earlier, it's a gentle program. No one's being pushed or prodded in any particular way. So it's creates a really good space for us to go on that healing journey.
It's quite amazing. And it's funny that that somatic therapies, it's a fairly new therapy. I've been in Al-Anon a long time, and I kind of figured out for myself that a lot of this was in that just, that business of staying in the present and stuff. If you do that, you do start to notice your body, and you think, oh, I do carry stuff in my chest, and I do carry stuff in my gut. Kind of figure that out myself a bit, and it was so interesting to see that a lot of people have figured it out. This is where we are at this point in the history or whatever. In terms of the higher power and stuff, I often think that the whole deal about living in the present, which is so big in the 12 steps and in all the 12 step programs, it's one day at a time, but even narrower than that sometimes. It's getting in touch with your own body, and at the same time getting in touch with a higher power. I often find that by just aligning those three things, not well, two things, your mind, your body, and the higher power, that really does bring you back to reality. Is how do
That's
you work that stuff in your How do you work the higher power thing in?
I really like what you just said. I think it's about not leaving any part of you behind, and that includes your relationship with the higher power and how that can sort of that wants to reunite with your feelings. It doesn't want you to go, oh, I can't feel this way, or and so it is about not leaving parts of you behind. It's about and if as I say that, I think of that if I had to sum up my life, it was like I was leaving all these parts of myself behind because I didn't know how to meet my needs, because I had to protect my needs because I didn't feel safe. And you know, but as we start to have experiences that start to feel more safe, we start to be aware of what we need, and the higher power is sort of saying like it's okay. You know, we can trust that. You know, we there is a way. There is a way forward, and there is a way to bring our needs forward. And so, but
Thanks.
I love how you summed it up with the mind, body, spirit. I mean, that's perfect. Like just that being able to be with all of those dimensions of who we are.
And it's quite profound, but it's you kind of think, hey, I've discovered something, but in fact this is ancient wisdom that people discover generation after generation for millennia, it seems, but we just don't seem to be born knowing it, do we?
Yeah, I think I'm going to say something around like our Western culture. There's a lot of great things it's given us. Like, you know, there's a, I could talk about technology and the pros and cons of that, you know. But I feel like there's this emphasis on technology progressing at light speed, but is that the most important thing for us as humans and our spirit, our body, our mind? Like it's almost like we don't want to lose ourselves in technology. And just so it's just a, it's a, it's an interesting world we live in, because there's a lot of consumerism, you know. There's a lot of emphasis on technology obviously is a big one at the moment, and just we don't we could if we're not careful, we can become disconnected from ourselves and from that sort of in that natural way of being and that innate wisdom
That
and
we've
that
all got.
connection that we can have when we're not distracted by scrolling and all that sort of stuff, you know.
Consuming.
So yeah, so yeah, it's an interesting time in the world.
Tune in to Billabong Beats Tuesdays at 11 a.m. with me, Gavin Moore, giving a voice to both Western Kulin and Kulin First Nations peoples. Join me to talk about philosophy and dreamtime stories surrounding the waterhole, the sacred fire, the land, the plants and animals. Billabong Beats, 11 a.m. Tuesdays on 3CR.
This is a Living Free show on 3CR digital radio and live streaming on 3cr.org.au/streaming. Today I'm chatting to Chris about recovery from the effects of complex trauma, and maybe just recovery from the effects of being born into reality as it exists in families, and how to live in a more authentic way. And what the words you used, Chris, were about bringing all the parts of yourself, being not leaving parts of yourself behind.
Yeah. Well, that's right. So Carl Jung mentioned, you know, something about wholeness and, you know, the journey of wholeness, or oneness with self, you know. So it's being able to realize that we all have an inner child, and you know, we all have a masculine and a feminine side to us, and they're all part of our soul. Like our soul is this, like basically our soul is, it has all these different archetypes, you could say. Like the inner child, there's a masculine, a feminine, you know, there's a, you know, you could say a warrior, you could say a lover, you could say a magician, you could say a king or a queen. You know, so
Totally.
there's all these different archetypes, and that can help us sort of understand. You said earlier about like just if we look at it on a big picture level, you know, we're all really actually have a lot in common on a big picture level because we all have these different archetypes.
Yeah.
We may have different personal stories, but we've all got these mm-hmm. sort of archetypes, right?
Mm. These archetypes in Jungian therapy and Jungian theory, do they run amok sometimes? Like, is the problem that sometimes one archetype's running amok in someone, like the warrior or the whatever? Is that how, the right way to think about that?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think we tend to be stronger in some areas mm-hmm. than others.
Mm.
And we also have shadows in some areas, which is there might be parts of our warrior that we're not seeing, or they haven't awoken. I can relate to that a lot myself. Like I felt like, you know, because I was, I was a bit sort of withdrawn from life because I was protecting myself.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know how to get on the front foot. I didn't know how to be assertive, you know, so I developed people pleasing.
I was going to say people pleasing is a classic case of letting the warrior sleep out in the back rooms.
Yeah,
somewhere,
that's
whereas
right.
Sometimes people pleasing is don't be a people pleaser. Just show up with what they need to hear, what you need to say.
Yeah. So for me, like I mentioned earlier in our chat about anger, and, you know, I think sometimes anger can be very misunderstood and it can be sort of almost ostracized at times, or it can be shamed or ostracized or repressed. And in my case, you know, because I didn't sort of learn more about myself until my 30s, really, like I realized, you know, as I did that, I started to see this anger coming up because there were certain things I just felt helpless about, I suppose, or I didn't know what to do about. And and I suppose there was a bitterness I was carrying, and I didn't want to just sit with all of that. I needed to learn how to work with it. So I think I heard something about being assertive is a healthy expression of anger. So, and that doesn't mean I want to go around, you know, telling people how everything is, you know. It just means that there's something actually we hear in Al-Anon, say what you mean, but don't say it mean.
Yep.
So it's really just everyone's got the right to share what's true for them. And and everyone's got the right to be valued in that. And sometimes that might mean an uncomfortable conversation. And but I think if we're coming from our heart and we're coming from our truth and there's kindness and love and respect, like we need to be able to say what, you know, what is important to us, and we need to be able to say what's true for us. So so that so I think the warrior energy is being able to do that in a loving way, just to be able to say what we need and what's true and right for us.
I struggled a lot with the idea of detachment in Al-Anon for decades, and part of it was because I was unable to just detach, because the rage in my body in response to somebody wouldn't let my mind do anything as sophisticated as detach.
Yeah.
We'd have to get out of the room, or, you know. And what I've learned about how I see, and I never really understood it, and how you do that. And I now see detachment as self-care for myself, number one, and compassion for the other person, number two. If you haven't got a strong sense of that you're going to be caring for yourself here primarily, but you're going to have compassion for the other person at the same time, the communication's not going to be good. So, you know, you got to be able to hold both. So much of what we're talking about here seems to be about holding contradictory things almost, or two different things in ourselves at the same time.
Yeah, Yeah, well said. I think so. I mean, the heart space is brings us into that relational place where we're considerate of our surroundings. We're considerate of, how we feel about other people. And so when we can express our needs and wants, we can have consideration. And I like what you said about compassion, because we're not trying to walk over anyone. We're just trying to be seen. And I mean, at the end of the day, if we can be honest and show who we really are, then people have a can
Oh, yeah.
make better choices about where they want to go with
In
us,
relation
because
to that, yeah. Can I go back to what you were talking about before the break, about us getting out of control scientifically, becoming technology addicted to technology and consuming. It seems to me that what that is that the putting we've put in Western society far too much emphasis on the mind, not enough on the heart and the soul, and we've kicked the soul out when we kicked religion out and all that. So I've been saying to myself lately, just jokingly, to other people and stuff, the mind, what is it good for? And I've really thought it's actually not good for that much in a lot of ways. It's good for solving mathematical equations, technical problems, stuff like that. It's a great thing, but it's a bloody awful thing at 3 o'clock in the morning when it's just it goes rogue.
I
So
think,
how do you understand that?
it's a great question, and kind of it's an interesting topic. And what I would say is, what I've come to learn is that the mind isn't, when used correctly, it's really an instrument. It's an instrument for processing, for communicating, for planning, for but it's no good if we're just stuck in it and we don't have access to these other dimensions, as you said, like our soul and our spirit, and or higher power, if you like, and our body being embodied, because we need to listen to, like they say, that there's a mind in our gut and there's a mind in our heart. That's, I think I'm starting to hear things like that, which is good news that that's being sort of recognized more. So it's really about checking in with these different, you could call it, I mean, there's a, in, maybe not so much in the Western culture, but in other parts of the world, they refer to these chakras, right? These energy centers. So, I mean, that's something that, where, we have these seven energy centers starting, and they sort of run vertically through us. So we've got the crown up the top, and we've got our base down the bottom, and we've got other energy centers. And I think what I love about the chakras is that it's inclusive of, these different parts of who we are, and these different energy centers. So I guess I would wrap up the question by, like, the mind is important, but we need to be able to connect to these other parts of ourselves so that the mind can function in a healthier way.
And we
And
need to
I,
say, sorry.
yeah, and I was going to say, just to finish, actually, I agree with you about, we've been raised in a world that celebrates, academia and thinking, and just, spending all this time in our mind. And, like, even if we're like, information, the information age, the technology age, it's all about thinking, thinking, thinking. But often we have to go beyond the mind to actually create healthier thinking, which is a little bit of a kind of an ironic thing, but I believe that to be true.
And I think we have to embrace the irrational and as well, or non-rational, like the chakras, for instance. When if I'm in a yoga class and they're saying that the chakras are different colors and they're spinning energy and stuff, my mind goes, I don't think so. I don't think there's any colors in there, and I don't think there's probably any spinning energy in there either. However, I know for a fact that there's different bits of my book. I know that all of those things relate to the things that philosophy talks about. The base chakra is responsible for certain things, and it's just so we can get a bit bamboozled by language.
Yes.
And get tied up in arguments about whether there's a God or not a God and all that. And who cares? Just embrace the irrational, and because that's part of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's all about the experience we have. So if someone's taking you into your chakra and they're using language and colors, and like, it's all about the experience you're having, sometimes it can connect us to something that we're not used to connecting to in that way. I agree. Like, there's no use in getting tangled up in, like, this is the right way to connect to chakras or the right way to connect to God. I mean, there is no one right way, and it's
No.
just what works for you, and
Yeah.
that's the journey that we get to experience and
Yeah.
discover.
We've only got 2 minutes left. I just want to say something random about when you're talking about, the science is now saying your mind's in your gut and your gut's in your mind or your brain gut and all that. I was thinking also that, this latest thing about octopuses being really smart and their brain is literally located all through their different tentacles. Did you know that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, literally. They've got one thing that's like their brain stem, but the brain, physiologically is actually located in all the different tentacles. Just putting that out there. I don't know if that's got anything to do with living free trauma or anything.
It's actually fascinating. Yeah, fascinating how different animals work, and yeah.
But let's get back to you just to finish us up for the last couple of minutes. So now you've talked about your music as that's something as a spark in you, and I see it as a sort of a that's a sign that kind of spark's a sign to listen to tell you where to go in life and stuff. So where are you with your music now and your stage fright as well?
I think I've got to the point where I've fortunately been able to experience lots of different kinds of music in both as a solo performer and in various bands. And so if I think about it, I'm at a stage where I'm sort of going with the flow with it a bit at the moment. Like, I've got certain ideas and plans, but I feel like I've done some of the things I want to do, and this coaching work I mentioned is really speaking to me. And I've started a anyone who's interested in is it okay if I share
Do
about?
just do some spruking if you like.
Yeah, I thought I'd check with you. Thank you. So I've launched a business called Holistic Guidance and Support. And I've got I'm building up my clientele, my one-to-one clientele. I've also done a few group workshops and that kind of thing. And I've got a podcast, which is the Holistic Guidance and Support
Oh, let's get
podcast.
on that. So
So
where do they get that? Where do we get that?
yeah, so at the moment it's on YouTube. So if you look for the Holistic Guidance and Support podcast, it's on YouTube, and it's quite new, this one. So it's fairly recent, and I'm planning on getting it on some of the other platforms like Spotify and et cetera. So
Oh,
if, yeah,
great.
if anyone's interested in, if anything I've said has led anyone to be curious or want to connect, they can reach out
So
via
they can the
that.
holistic guidance and support. Have you got a website for that, or should they
Yeah,
email
so I've
you?
got a it would be facebook.com/holisticguidanceandsupport, if I've got that correctly. I hope
Well,
so.
if they go to Facebook and put in holistic guidance and support.
It should come up.
It's been absolutely fantastic having you on. I've really enjoyed the conversation, Chris.
Oh, likewise. I really appreciate your questions and your connection, the connection we've had, just thoroughly enjoyed being able to chat with you, Anne, and thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So, if you're concerned about drinking in a relative or friend and would like to find out more about Al-Anon, you can go contact them on 1-300-252-666 or go to alanon.org.au. If you're concerned about your own drinking, you can contact Alcoholics Anonymous on 1-300-222-222 or go online at aa.org.au. If you'd like to find out more about Chris, you can go to Facebook and put in holistic guidance and support, and you'll get access to Chris's ideas and also be able to contact you. And to get onto the YouTube podcast that you've started, do you just go to YouTube and put in holistic guidance and support?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. I'm hoping that'll lead you to what I'm doing.
It's so hard because there'll be probably 1,000 people around the world got some kind of title like that.
it's like a sea of videos on YouTube, but hopefully you find me. Yeah, really, exactly. It's a vast ocean.
If the content in the segment you just listened to has raised questions or caused distress to you, please call Lifeline on 1300. Please call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or visit lifeline.org.au. If the issue is sexual assault or violence, please go to 1800 RESPECT, 1-800-737-732. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned now for more Radical Radio on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.